So Medicaid, sending it back to the states, capping its growth rate. We've been dreaming of this since I've been around, since you and I were drinking at a keg, you know.
I'm Dan Diamond, this is Pulse Check, and that was House Speaker Paul Ryan appearing at a National Review event on Friday and talking about how much he's wanted to change healthcare benefits and for how many years. It's not clear yet whether Ryan's healthcare bill will pass the House this week, but until then, there's going to be a frenzy of activity on the Hill, and there's a frenzy of activity in our offices too. I tracked down two of my colleagues, Paul Demko and Rachna Pradhan, pulled them in for this bonus podcast where we talk about the healthcare reform actions on the Hill this week and what could happen next. There will be a regular Pulse Check on Wednesday, so keep your ears peeled for that. But now, here's Paul and Rachna. It has been a crazy news week. I have Shanghai, two of my colleagues, to come and talk about the healthcare debate in the House. First, Rachna Pradhan, who's our state reporter covering state issues. Hey, Rach.
Hey, Dan.
And then Paul Demko, our reporter who has broken scoop after scoop about the House healthcare bill. Paul, thank you for sneaking away from the Republican caucus.
You're welcome.
Where you're hiding in disguise.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. All right, pleasantries out of the way. It is Monday afternoon as we sit down to do this. We're less than 72 hours out from when the House is scheduled to vote on their healthcare bill. So let's go through what actually has to happen this week. What are the big things that are still looming before that bill can take, or before the vote can take place?
Well, right now, so as you alluded to, we are looking like we're going to have a Thursday vote in the House on their American Healthcare Act. And we have before that a Rules Committee meeting, I believe at 10 a.m. on Wednesday. So that's when the next big action item is going to take place before the bill gets to the House floor. And I'll say, I guess, backing it up even further than that, so it's Monday afternoon, and we know that there is a so-called manager's amendment that's in the works that would make a number of changes to the House's bill, and we have not seen that yet. And so that's... we'll have to see what's included in there and just whether it makes the bill more conservative, whether it allays some concerns about the premiums that older Americans especially would pay, and anything else that they decide to fold in.
Those are the concerns that some Republicans have voiced in saying, we can't vote for this. Republicans need 216 votes on Thursday.
Right.
They can't lose more than about 20. Right now, there are more than 20 House Republicans who have said...
And I think what we're hearing with this manager's amendment is that you're going to see... you know, an attempt to placate both sides, you know, some changes to deal with the conservatives that have been most vocal in opposing this bill, but also to try to, you know, tamp down some resistance from some of the moderates, too. So you're likely to see them, you know, try to kind of thread that needle between both of those points of tension.
One issue that's come up quite a bit, the governors in states that have expanded Medicaid, Republican governors don't like this bill, given the cuts that it would institute on funding for Medicaid. They have some sway in the Senate. Tom Cotton from Arkansas, other Republican senators tied to their governors. Is it the same in the House, Rach?
Well, that is a very good question. There's one thing actually I would say about that. So, for example, okay, so we do have a handful of Republican governors that have come out publicly now, written to Congress and said, we don't like the House bill, and here's why. I don't think that the opposition, maybe, or the reservations, I should say, in the Senate are not necessarily because, even from Republican senators, because they want to retain Medicaid expansion. I don't think that's necessarily where Senator Cotton is coming from. I do think that there is a broad amount of concern from Republican governors in the states that what the bill that is on the table right now does not give them any new flexibility to run their programs in the face of a very steep funding cut. That's really problematic. And I think governors are definitely asking their counterparts in Congress for that. But from what I can tell, it seems like process reconciliation is maybe preventing some of those changes from happening. So going back to your question about the House, I do think that just generally moderate Republicans in the House also have voiced concerns about the coverage losses that we are looking at or estimating under this House bill. And so that's a worry broadly. It's not just about the expansion of Medicaid. I think just those numbers from what we saw from CBO last week gives them a lot of pause about supporting a bill that would do that.
That specific number being that 24 million fewer Americans would have coverage if this law takes effect in a decade or so. So the manager's amendment that we're all waiting on this afternoon, and I'm sure by the time listeners hear this, it may either be out or will be out soon enough. What are the things that more broadly could be changed that have been these inflection points?
Well, I think, as Rachna mentioned, the subsidies for older Americans is a really big deal. I mean, the numbers are just really stark if you look at potentially how much people in that 50 to 64-year-old bracket would be facing in terms of premium increases. That's a big deal. And you got to remember, that is the core of Trump's constituency. I mean, he won because older Americans, particularly older white Americans, voted for him in huge numbers. So are they really going to come out of the gate and their first thing is going to be jacking up premiums exorbitantly on that population? That seems a tough thing politically. So that's one. On the other side of things, you know, we heard this coming out of Trump meeting with the Republican Study Committee members last week. That's more about Medicaid. And, you know, what we're likely to see is some kind of optional, you know, that states would have the option to do a block grant, which is something conservatives have been trying to do for decades, and it would be optional work requirements if states want to do that, which I believe, Rachna, correct me if I'm wrong, that some states proposed that to the Obama administration and were rebuffed, right?
Yes. Repeatedly, there have been Republican states, even Kentucky, for example, has a pending proposal before the Trump administration to institute a work requirement. And I should say, this is when we talk about work requirements in Medicaid and what Republicans are trying to do, they're generally only looking at the expansion population, so people who are covered under the Affordable Care Act.
That 11 million population.
Yes. So they're not targeting those work employment requirements on the disabled or on the elderly per se. It's really in light of the expansion of the program under Obamacare, right? So yes, so that's something that I think we're expecting to see. Whether it can stay based on Senate rules is a whole totally different question, though.
So we've talked a bit about the governors and what they want. We're not going to get into the Senate right now because that is just a huge black box, depending on even what happens in the House. What do you two think is the best case scenario for Republicans this week, the worst case scenario, and then the most likely scenario? Given that it's Monday afternoon and Paul Ryan and team are several dozen Republicans in the hole for getting support.
I'll start. I mean, I think the chances, I think the chances are quite good that they're going to manage to ram this thing through the House. And I think that for two reasons. One, I mean, the tip of the spear of resistance has been the Freedom Caucus folks and the conservatives. And Trump is very, very popular in those districts. And Trump is all in on this bill. He might not be sweating the details, as our colleague Josh Dossie reported today. But, I mean, Mick Mulvaney, the vice president, Tom Price.
Mulvaney, the budget chief, should be clear.
These folks are all in, twisting arms, working Capitol Hill. They're going to make this thing happen. So I just feel, and then the second thing, and this is something our colleague Jen says all the time.
Jen Abercorn.
Abercorn, exactly. They've spent the last 7 years saying their number one goal is to repeal Obamacare. You put a bill on the floor and say this is your only chance. This is your one chance to make good on 7 years of promises. Are they really going to? That's going to be a tough vote. So I think they get it through the House.
And Speaker Ryan, for what it's worth, Speaker Paul Ryan has already framed it in that way. He was doing that. He said, this is your binary choice. This is the bill we have. Either you vote for this to fulfill, as Paul said, a longstanding priority of ours, or Obamacare stays and which one is worse when you look at from you know, the perspective of members of the House Freedom Caucus or even the RSC, right?
Republican Study Committee. Yeah, which has come on board. The Freedom Caucus is the one that's been more fierce in resistance. And that's
a much bigger group. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, but I think it's something like 170 members or something like that.
Is it that big?
Yeah, it's a huge group.
I think it depends how you count it. I mean, the number that I use in Pulse is usually 20 to 30.
For Republican Study Committee?
No, for the House Freedom Caucus.
I'm saying Republican Study Committee is much larger.
Both of you, it sounds like, think that the most likely scenario is this goes through the House. And I'm inclined to agree with you. I guess just playing out the thread here, the best case scenario is that Republicans really do rally with some ease to this idea. This is the one chance to get rid of the ACA. They rally toward it. The worst case scenario is that they're out there twisting arms, and for whatever reason, those arms aren't twisting. The House Freedom Caucus, whoever decides that they're making a stand, and there are enough Republicans that they feel like they have safety in numbers, or even some other random White House event happens that, and be it something with this hearing around Russian hacking or something else that seems to take the wind out of the sails of the Republican Party and doesn't allow them to rally around this vote.
I mean, I'll make 2 points. I think that would be disastrous. A, this is the first big initiative of the Trump administration, and Paul Ryan will have failed miserably in delivering on it, and it's a top priority. B, I think we know from healthcare battles in the past, the longer they drag on, the more the public is able to engage on the details, the more the opposition builds, and the more difficult it becomes to get anything through. So if they don't jam this thing through quickly, I think the prospects of them ever getting it done becomes much lower.
But I would say, I mean, what you were saying about the wind being taken out of their sails, I don't think anything honestly could really do that. I mean, if you think about 7 years of promises that they're going to do that, repeal major parts of the ACA, nothing has really taken the wind out of their sails so far. And so why would it happen this week? I don't know.
Well, my argument would be because they've never had a vote that actually mattered like this week. It was easy to rally behind something where the consequences were nil and it was a symbolic victory. And we were talking earlier about John Boehner. He had serious problems at times getting the caucus behind him. There were the bills that the votes that were pushed off, I think on tax reform. And then some other embarrassments that befell him that now seem to have been passed on to Paul Ryan.
Right. This is a huge test for Paul Ryan, his whip operation, and whether they can corral votes on their number one priority. And if they fail in that quest, then it's ugly. It's bad. It's not good for them.
And it would be really damaging for the rest of President Trump's domestic policy agenda for the rest of the year. And I think they all know that. And so that's all the more reason why they want to make sure this thing is locked up before it gets to the floor on Thursday.
This is teeing up. I mean, in particular, tax reform. Part of it is the savings. That's one reason they're doing it first. I mean, they'll tell you it's because Obamacare is such a disaster that they have to do it right away. But I think maybe the savings for tax reform are an important piece of this too. So it the rest of their agenda tees off of this.
And the fact that they're doing it through budget reconciliation, which comes now, as opposed to if they were trying to do it with a traditional majority vote or filibuster-proof majority in the Senate. So since I have both of you here, and Rach, you cover state issues, Paul, when you're not all over the Hill, you're tracking the insurance industry closely. What are the news stories in healthcare that are getting slightly overlooked because of this focus on the House vote?
From an insurer perspective, I mean, what gets forgotten again and again and again is that, you know, the Obamacare markets are really about 5% of the insurance market. So it's not a huge piece of the business for insurance companies. And, you know, right now we are in the middle of the Medicare Advantage rate setting season. The Trump folks put forth a payment proposal for 2018 back at the beginning of February, and that will be finalized at the beginning of April. And that is a $200 billion per year market for private health plans. That swamps you know, the exchange markets, the Obamacare markets. So that's really, I think, you know, insurers are very heavily invested in that and anticipating what comes on April 1st and lobbying hard to get some changes that would basically give them more money.
So let me caveat this with, I do think that for states, the biggest thing right now is what is going on in Washington. So, you know, that's the biggest story. And that, of course, will affect state legislative sessions, which are happening right now. But how much legislating can they really do on healthcare? Or are they willing to do because of all the uncertainty with what's going on in Congress? I do think one thing that's interesting, and this is related to Obamacare, but I think where I am probably going to focus a bit more attention on is what is the appetite from states to do the so-called 1332 waivers under the law. Secretary Price sent some pretty bullish signals on wanting states to apply for those to maybe shore up their markets or to, as they would put it, ease the transition away from the healthcare law. And so far, states have been the interest has not really been there in pursuing that. But I do wonder if that will change now with the increased emphasis on from the administration. And so we'll have to see if that gets some more attention in the coming weeks.
My last questions are, I think, for you, Paul. The past couple weeks, you have scooped again and again the Republican bill before it was released. It got to the point that Senator Rand Paul was asking you on Twitter for a copy of the draft. I mean, the entire healthcare industry was tuned in.
My mother was so proud.
Was she really?
No, she was out of the country. But
did she even know that you had these scoops?
I think she does have a Twitter account. I don't know if she follows me, but...
Well, I feel like we might be plumbing into depths that we're not prepared to handle
on
this podcast. But what I was going to ask was, when you are at the center of a story like this, this is any reporter's dream. How did it feel?
It's been very gratifying. And, you know, I think, to be perfectly honest, there's a bit of luck here as well. Sometimes you catch a good break, but it's definitely been gratifying to have, people say lots of nice things about me and lots of mean things about me on Twitter. It's definitely, I have not really had quite this kind of spotlight before, so it's been interesting.
I don't know what Rach has heard, but there have been various theories about how you have gotten your hands on this draft. I've heard the theory that Steve Bannon, this is true, people have spread this, that Steve Bannon is leaking this to you because he wants to sabotage the Republican health bill.
Or that Paul's
no comment. Dan.
Or that he's a Republican member of Congress running around and getting the bills that way.
Yeah, he could pull, I think I made that joke in our team meeting today, he could pull it off. You have that kind of Minnesota congressman vibe.
It must be the orange sweater.
Which our listeners thankfully can't see. we'll leave it there with a comment on Paul's reporting chops and
clothing choices,
yes,
apparently.
A model for us all in so many ways. And listeners should keep their eyes peeled on Politico.com. This week we have a ton of coverage planned. There is a lot that is going to happen. And we will probably have not just our normal Wednesday podcast, but a bonus one on Friday if we can all survive the likely Thursday vote, and we'll come back and talk about what it all means. That's it for Pulse Check this week. Thank you so much to Bridget, Emergency Podcast Mulcahy, Paul Demko, Rachna Pradhan, and Blake Hounshell for sitting in. You can find Pulse Check, as always, on all your favorite podcast apps. My favorite is Overcast, and we will be back with a new episode of Pulse Check later this week.